Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio, and, well, I am the guy who completely ate way too many eclairs this morning, otherwise known as the Big Jack, and since it is Friday,
start spreading the news.
Of course, Mean Schomburg Stew is with me.
Right, and I think I'll have some apple turnovers tomorrow because of all those eclairs you had today.
Yeah, oh, trust me, don't eat as many as I did. It's not good for the rest of the day. But anyways, if you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so you can look for something popping up over there, hopefully sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page, and give that a like since you went all the way over there. Why not, right? Don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which, of course, is at Sports Time Radio. Sadly, just like last week, we still don't have Stu out there on Twitter, but feel free to look me up at Burke Time, and I will gladly pass along any message you wanna give to Stu. So there we go. We're off and running for Friday.
All right.
So I know you're very excited, but I did want to ask you, you know, kind of the off NBA topic here. You know, it's always kind of the question. Do you think this layoff is going to have any effect on the way the Golden State Warriors end up playing when and if the NBA Finals actually get started?
It's got to have some kind of an effect on them because they're really going to be off a long, long time, at least a week, if not longer.
So, yeah, just, well, you figure, you know, I don't even remember when they closed out their series, but, you know, game 6 of Raptors-Bucks is tomorrow, so that's obviously the earliest it could end. If it doesn't end on Saturday, you know, I'll have to double-check the schedule because knowing the NBA, you don't know what they're going to do with it. But my guess is Game 7 would be Monday. Let me see if I can actually hunt that schedule down real quick here right now. But, yeah, I mean, that's didn't the Warriors close out? Was it Tuesday night they closed out?
It seems like a long time ago already, and I think that Milwaukee is going to upset Toronto and force a game 7. But if they do play on Monday, they'll be in direct competition with the first game of the NHL Finals.
So yeah, look in here. They have tomorrow. It's a 7:30 game on TNT, and then Monday is 7:30 on TNT. They have the finals scheduled to start Thursday. So if they do go 7, whoever gets the win will get the extra day. But I don't know how much help that actually is to anybody.
Despite the rust, either of those teams have a chance to beat Golden State?
You know, from what I keep hearing, and again, I don't know much about this, everybody seems to think Milwaukee has the team that could do it. I don't know. And looking back here, Golden State won on Monday. So they're going to have, Monday was the 20th, Thursday is the 30th. They're going to have 10 days off in between games. So I don't know. I mean, You know, neither team has looked fantastic. You know, I mean, they've had some moments, but Golden State actually almost looks better without Kevin Durant. So I don't know if anybody beats them.
Well, if they were to lose a game, you would figure that the first game back after a week and a half rest would be the game that the road team can steal one.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I guess you always wonder, you know, if, you know, maybe they're just, you know, a little too rested. And it does seem like the reports now is that Kevin Durant won't be ready for game one or possibly game two. I guess there's a slim chance DeMarcus Cousins actually makes it back. It seemed like the report I saw today that Cousins is actually ahead of Durant, which is kind of interesting because Cousins had the much more serious injury. You know, I know Durant is the big free agent on the market, but do you think the Warriors kind of cruising along without him hurts his value at all, or does it really matter in the NBA nowadays?
Well, you would think that it would hurt his value a little bit, considering he's going to be a free agent, which means that he's going to try awfully hard to get back into games three and four.
Yeah, I heard some guy talking today on just one of the shows I was checking out. He thinks it's actually better for Durant to wait to come back until the Warriors actually lose a game, so it kind of seems like they need him. You know, because obviously now, I mean, people are looking at it as kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever, do they really need this guy? So.
Yeah, that's interesting. And as I mentioned before, I think that Milwaukee is going to surprise and win the game tomorrow night, forcing game seven. And that one I couldn't predict, but game seven will be up for grabs, even though if Milwaukee does pull the upset, it'll be in Milwaukee for Game 7, but anything can happen in Game 7, as we found out throughout the years.
Yeah, well, you know, the only way Milwaukee's going to win anything is if the guys who aren't named Antetokounmpo can actually make some shots, because, you know, they're just not giving him any help at all.
Yeah, I was surprised when as how easily Toronto pulled away to win that game. At game number five, I thought it would be a close match, but the other games have been, or most of them at least.
So yeah, and then I did the other fun story I heard from the NBA is apparently LeBron James is on the recruiting trail already this offseason. You know, it's being reported that he's met with Jimmy Butler, and he's also somehow met with Kawhi Leonard, even though Leonard is still playing, obviously for the fact of bringing them to the Lakers. Now, we everybody knows that this is actually against rules and it's tampering, but we also know that they're not going to do a damn thing to LeBron because they want him and the Lakers in the playoffs. So, LeBron can go out and, you know, basically do whatever. I mean, he tried to tamper with Anthony Davis last season. And actually, he more or less did because Davis signed with the agency that LeBron owns. So, you know, when Davis is a free agent, if the Lakers don't already have him, you know he's signing there. So, I don't know. I mean, do you think this is something the NBA should actually – try to stop, or should they just, you know, at this point let it be a free-for-all and let the guys go and get whoever they think they can go and get?
Well, I think that regarding Jimmy Butler, I don't see anything wrong with him talking to Butler right now, but for sure he should not be in any kind of contact with Leonard.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, obviously that hasn't stopped him. You know, I mean, I believe there's actually been conversations between him and Kyrie Irving as well. And, again, I mean, the NBA isn't going to do a damn thing about this, whether it's against the rules or not. It's just kind of a joke that they even have rules against this. But, yeah, the negative here is, there's nobody in Chicago that's going to be able to talk to one of these guys. The Bulls aren't getting any of these guys. None of the bad teams are going to be able to recruit like this. Does it end up being bad for the league when it's kind of top heavy?
I think it is. I think that there's just too many mediocre teams now in the NBA, and so few teams that are playoff ready type teams. There aren't that many of them. And
no.
The Bulls, for example, they're on the they're if they make an eighth seed over the next 4 or 5 years, that'll be about as or seventh seed. That's about as good as they can get.
Yeah, no, you know, teams like the Bulls, and, you know, like I said, after the draft lottery, the teams like the Bulls, it was the Bulls, the Suns, and I forgot the other team, the Cavaliers, were the three teams that got dropped out while, you know, the Knicks just fell down to three. I guarantee you all four of those teams are back in the draft lottery next year, and it won't even surprise me if they have the four worst records in the league again.
Yeah, it's you feel bad for the fans, the fan bases for those teams, those franchises. They deserve better than that, and they're not getting it.
You know, and I understand that the NBA wanted to try to stop teams from tanking. I get that. I hate tanking. It, you know, it's a joke, and technically it worked. You know, I mean, you look at the draft lottery. Even though the Pelicans did their share of tanking after they couldn't trade Anthony Davis, you know, they limited him to like 20 minutes a game or whatever, and you know, it worked out for them. But I just don't see how these four teams still sucking next year helps the league.
It doesn't.
Everybody keeps saying, well, the Knicks are going to get Kevin Durant and they're going to approve and they can sign one other, you know, big money free agent. Who the hell wants to go to the Knicks? You know, everybody acts like this is still a big time NBA organization and they're a joke. They have the worst owner in professional sports and people think guys want to go play there.
And how many years has it been since they've been in the playoffs?
Oh, God, we actually looked this up at one point in time, and I cannot remember, but I will see if I can find it again. It has been quite an absence for the Knicks. And, you know, even when they were getting in, when they had Carmelo and he was playing well there, they weren't anywhere close to really being a – you know, a championship contender.
Well, you know,
so,
the NBA wants
you know,
a viable contender for both Los Angeles and New York. The NBA would love to have those teams be competitive. That's what they hope to have done. And so far, it's not happening.
Yeah, no, you know, I mean, obviously they're, you know, the two biggest television markets and, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, that's what you're looking for, but you're barking up the wrong tree with the, with the Knicks. They're, they're a dumpster fire. So, I don't know.
If Durant actually comes to New York, I don't see them still making the playoffs. Well, if they get lucky and get that third selection and he turns out to be as good as Hyde, maybe they could squeeze in, especially, of course, being in the Eastern Division always helps. Eastern Conference always helps.
That may be their biggest benefit is the fact that, they're in the Eastern Conference, but it looks like they'll end up with R.J. Barrett. So he obviously he's a talented player out of Duke. People have compared him to Kobe Bryant. You know, obviously we don't know if he's going to be the next Kobe Bryant. You know, that's way down the road here. But, we'll see. Here, I finally found it. It has been six seasons since the Knicks have been to the playoffs. They went in 2012-2013. They beat the Celtics in the first round before being knocked out by the Pacers in the second round. So,
that's a long time for a major market team not to be in the playoffs.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I mean, you know, you're looking at a team that last year won 17 games. So
yeah,
they'll need a big improvement to get themselves up into the playoffs. I don't know, is adding Kevin Durant and R.J. Barrett enough to get them in the playoffs, even in a bad Eastern Conference? I don't think so, because obviously all these other teams are going to add players too. You know, I mean, the Atlanta Hawks are going to get two top 10 picks. Granted, they're not going to be up in the area where they're going to get that game changer guy, because you really need to be in the top three or four. So, you know, but I mean, you look at it, the Knicks were, 24 games out of the eighth spot in the East. Is Durant and a top draft pick enough to make up 24 games? That's a lot of games.
It is a lot of games. But it has happened before, but I would say the scenario right now is quite unlikely for those two guys, if they get Durant, make enough of a difference for them to make the playoffs next season. But they are fortunate to be in the Eastern Conference, of course.
So, yeah, that will help. I mean, and in reality, the difference in the playoffs was 7 games. You know, the Pistons were 500. They were the last Eastern Conference team in. The Clippers were 48-34, and they were the last Western Conference team in. Oddly, the teams in ninth place had the exact same records. So, you know, there's not a huge discrepancy at the bottom of the playoff races there. The West is still obviously a little better record wise, but you know, it's not a big discrepancy. And you know, not only did Milwaukee end up having the most wins, but the Toronto actually had more wins than Golden State. You know, even though everybody I think believes Golden State is the best team.
Yeah, without question. But don't forget that Golden State plays in the Western Conference, which is a lot stronger than the Eastern Conference.
Well, only at the top. You know, the bottom teams are just as bad as, you know, anybody else's bottom teams. So, you know.
It'll be interesting when the playoffs finally start next week to see how competitive the Eastern Conference champion is against Golden State, because I don't think they're quite as strong as they've been in previous years.
No, you know, they, everybody gets a little older. Everybody else has kind of improved. You know, that's just kind of how these things go. So,
well, that's the cyclical aspect of sports, professional sports.
Yeah. But yeah, sooner or later, they're going to catch up, and it just kind of happens. It's like,
we know it's going to turn around eventually, but it seems interminable, especially in the Chicago area.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, that's all you can really hope for. I mean, obviously, you know, the draft pick the Bulls are going to get isn't going to help them. You know, the Cavaliers, the Hawks, the Wizards, you know, they're all in the same boat. The Suns, the Mavericks, you know, none of these teams moved up. Memphis is a nice surprise. It's interesting that the smallest two television markets have the first two picks in the NBA draft, but, you know, we're not saying anything, so. But, yeah, I mean, I can sit here and predict now that the Bulls, Cavaliers, and Knicks and Suns are the four bottom teams next year. You know, and I mean, that's not a stretch by any means. You know, they're not going to get – you know, the Knicks will get some help out of the draft. And if they sign Durant, maybe they're not a bottom four team, but they're still a lottery team. They're not going to the playoffs. You know, none of those other teams are getting any help out of the draft. You know, I mean, I think I saw where the Bulls projected like a point guard from somewhere. Ooh, whoopee. That'll solve their problems.
That'll help. The Bulls have three or four decent core players. If they're all healthy next season, do they have a chance to surprise?
No. God, no. No, you use the word decent. What you need in the NBA is great, and the Bulls don't have that.
No, they have a few decent players.
Yeah.
Porter is
that
they got, and of course Levine is the me first guy, and I don't know how good he is from a team aspect, and then it's a crapshoot after that.
You know, look at the teams hanging around. You know, Golden State has Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, who are great. The Bucks have Antetokounmpo, who is great. The Raptors have Kawhi Leonard, who is great. You need at least that one guy where you can attach, he's a great player. You know, if you can't attach that, you know, the average players aren't beating you. You know, I mean, you can look at part of the Bucks' struggles. When Antetokounmpo gets shut down, there's nobody there to pick up the slack. You know, there's not a secondary player. Somehow, oddly, Toronto found it in Fred VanVleet last night. I don't know if that continues or if it was just happened to be a hot stretch. But, yeah, so, you know, we'll see. But, you know, those are kind of the things you need. And, you know, none of those teams have it. I mean, you do wonder with a team like Atlanta if – maybe Trae Young is on his way to be great, and if they could add the right pieces, maybe they could be sneaky next year. But, you know, I think they ended up with picks 8 and 10. That didn't really help them. You know, if they would have landed in the top 3 or 4, they could have really made a difference.
Well, I think that they'll be quite a competitive team, though, next season.
Yeah, you know, it's looking like, you know, they're at least on the right path. You know, you never know. The NBA is so goofy. But we'll see how it shakes out and who ends up doing what. But I obviously won't be watching a ton of it because I just don't care that much. I mean, they can – you know, run out there, whatever they want to run out there. And, you know, like I tried to watch the end of the game last night and I made the mistake of turning it on with 6 minutes left and I had to turn it off because I just can't sit through all the, you know, all the BS, you know, the stop play and the timeouts and the commercials. And, you know, so I came back and I think I ended up watching like the last 50 seconds or something. That's all I needed to see. I didn't need to see anything else. So.
You know, the game was pretty well decided way before that last minute or so.
Yeah, you know, and I mean that. You know, I mean that's the one thing they need to fix, the, you know, the end of games. I mean, talk about pace of play. I know everybody complains about baseball, but good Lord, man, figure out how to speed up the end of an NBA game for me.
Yeah, I noticed one thing between those two top teams in the East. Boy, they're really bad on free throws. I mean, these are supposed to be the two top teams in the Eastern Conference, and a lot of them are really off when it comes to free throws, and that could be critical in a close game, as we know.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's, you know, it's so odd that as the NBA game has progressed, three-point shooting has become better, but free throw shooting has become worse. You would think if you could hit a three-pointer, you could stand at the free-throw line with nobody on you and make your free throws. But
these
guys can't.
Why
is
that? Why not? Most of those guys should be at minimum 80% free-throw shooters, and a lot of them are just horrible, absolutely horrible.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I can understand it with, you know, you do get some of the bigger guys who are just pathetic shooters. You know, there's just nothing you can do about that. You're always going to run into those type of guys here and there in the league. But, I mean, you know, there are guards now that can stand out there and hit 7 of 10 three-pointers, and you get them to the free-throw line, and they hit 6 of 10 free throws.
Yeah.
And it's like, just, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
So
it staggers me to see how bad some of these guys are. I saw a couple of guys last night, I think, missed both free throw attempts. And the game was fairly close at that point in time. You know how critical it is, how important to make your free throws in a playoff game when this is close score.
Yeah, you know, you would, I mean, you know, luckily it didn't, you know, it didn't cost Toronto, so that was, you know, okay.
No.
But
yeah, not last night. But there was one game that they won. They had a double overtime the other day that they think that Toronto wound up winning the game, but they could have won regulation. But one of their players missed both free throws at the end of the game, and they were able to score and tie the game and force the overtime. That should never happen.
No, but you know, it doesn't surprise me when it does. You know, I mean, you know, with these guys, so it, you know, it's just kind of, you know, how it goes. But you look here, I just found Russell Westbrook stats. Now, obviously, we know Russell Westbrook is one of the best players in the NBA. From the free throw line last season, he shot 65.6%.
That's pretty bad.
Think about that. LeBron James, who is going to go down as one of, if not the greatest players in NBA history, shot 66.5% from the free throw line.
Yeah. It's not acceptable. Not acceptable.
No, that's embarrassing. For these guys to be sitting down here at that. I mean, in the 60s, these guys are shooting. That's a joke. I mean, they should at least be over 70, and like you said, closer to, or if not above 80.
Yeah, especially the top players. I remember, I always like to bring up Michael Jordan, and I think he was about an 85% free throw shooter, if I'm not mistaken, which is quite respectable. But these guys can't even hit 70%, just absolutely ridiculous.
So yeah, it's unbelievable when you see some of these things. And I know, you know, all people are going to say is, well, you know, you're picking on LeBron. No, I'm not picking on LeBron. Those are the stats. I didn't make the number up. It's right there in front of me.
Yes. Statistics don't lie, right? I mean, it is what it is.
I didn't
shoot him.
Of course,
his percentage is better than Will Chamberlain's, though, you know that much.
So, well, you know, again, Chamberlain was a big issue shooting free throws. You know, I mean, there's plenty of centers that I could have pulled off that list who are shooting 50% from the line.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's always been kind of, you know, now you would think it's getting better now because there are guys, you know, there are 7-footers who shoot 3-pointers. So you've got to figure it's, you know, that's going, the free throw shooting might improve as that happens, but who knows? You know, for all I know, it could get worse.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I still cannot figure out the free throw shooting. It should be almost automatic. There was one guy that he went to make 1,500 in a row, 2,000 in a row. He said he can't figure out why an NBA player can hit 80 to 90% of his free throws on a consistent basis. Of course, there are some who do that.
Oh yeah, there are guys, you know, and obviously those are the guys you want with the ball in their hand at the end of the game. You know that's how it is. So.
Yeah, if you foul a Curry near the end of a game, when the game is on the line, you know he's going to make both his free throws.
Right. There are those guys, you know, that are going to put you away, which is obviously why you don't want to foul them. But some of them are just, you know, incredibly pathetic, and you know that's why we see all the double switches at, you know, the end of games. You have the offense defense swaps, and you know, coaches are trying to get those guys out of there who can't shoot in case they accidentally end up with the ball.
Yeah. I know that you always used to intentionally foul Chamberlain, for example, And he threatened some of the players. And one of the guys said, "Will, please don't get mad at me. That's my job."
Yeah. Well, you know, even going back to college, you know, Jim Valvano, when NC State went on that run and they beat Houston, they did it by, you know, that was when you could just foul and put the guy on the line. They spent basically the entire second half fouling Alvin Franklin because he couldn't shoot free throws. And they kept putting him on the line, And, you know, he just couldn't hit his free throws. And, you know, and NC State ended up the miraculous win there at the end.
Yeah, and that mars the game to some extent when they do that intentionally.
Horrible to
watch. And years ago, I don't remember, but was it always a free throws, say 20, 25, 30 years ago, as compared to taking the ball out of bounds when they're a set number of fouls for a team?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I would like to see the NBA do something like if it's at towards the end of games and, you know, teams are fouling intentionally, if the guy goes to the line and makes both free throws, his team should get the ball back.
Yeah, right.
You know, so
it only happens now in a flagrant foul.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that would give guys incentives to actually practice and make their free throws, and would also slow teams down for intentionally fouling guys at the end of games. So,
yeah, I suppose there is a difference between a flagrant foul and an intentional foul.
Yeah. So, you know, but all right, well, that's enough. I've had my fill of the NBA today. We did have one afternoon baseball game that both Stu and I were very excited to watch, as the Cubs bullpen was gladly to nice enough to choke another game away to the Cincinnati Reds. The Cubs ended up losing 6-5 as Steve Cishek came in, because everybody's like, "Oh, don't worry, Cishek used to close." There's a reason the term "used to" is in that phrase, morons. He gave up what did he give up? Did he give up a 2-run bomb to Eugenio Suarez? That ended up costing the game 6-5 because Cincinnati has a legitimate closer who could come in and shut the door. See the difference there?
I got to tell you this. You will not believe it, but I had one of my premonitions when Suarez came to the plate. I said, "He's going to hit a home run." Unfortunately, this time my premonition was correct.
you were definitely right on. So.
And he didn't miss it. It wasn't a cheap home run.
So no, it wasn't. And you know, I mean, I'm tired of saying I told you so. So I'm not going to bring it up this time. You know, all I can say is I know, you know, Pedro Strop is close to returning. I still don't believe he's the answer, but he's better than Steve Cishek. So, you know, that's a big plus. And, I mean, I was frightened to see that the next pitcher out of the bullpen was James Norwood, because they had him closing in AAA, even though he had a 5 ERA in Iowa. So there, I guess that's the next answer. So there you go.
Yeah, that doesn't really give one confidence to see him coming into the game. Didn't he pitch a little bit last year for the Cubs? I'm trying to remember if he had
some brief appearances last year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
not
impressive last year, and not too impressive this year either, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's just kind of how it goes. But, you know, if you were playing fantasy, you know, David Hernandez picked up the win if you happen to have him stashed somewhere on your team. Like I mentioned, Steve Cishek was the guy who got blown up in the loss, and Raciel Iglesias, a legitimate major league closer, he picked up the save, his 11th of the year for Cincinnati. Here you go. Norwood stopped by for 11 games with the Cubs last year. He was 0-1 with an ERA of 4.09. So definitely.
I've seen worse than that. I've seen worse than that, but. His ERA is even higher this year in AAA.
Anytime you're over four in the National League, you're an embarrassment, and that you shouldn't be at the major league level, no matter who you are. So, but you know that's the situation the Cubs went with because they didn't think they needed bullpen help, and Brandon Morrow was gonna save the day. So,
well, he might have.
We'll see how. You know.
Oh, by the way, did you see that there's a new name bandied about as to who should take over as being the Cubs closer? Quickly rejected, though. Your friend and mine, Mr. Chatwood.
Oh, damn. I was hoping it was Carlos Marmol. So, you know.
Bring him out of retirement, huh?
So, well, actually, he's probably still pitching somewhere in, you know, the Dominican League or something. But, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. But,
yeah.
Well, you know, at this point, I mean, you know, the situation they're in, it wouldn't hurt to, you know, for them to try anybody at this point in time because it's, you know, it's a mess. So,
it is, and,
you know, I just keep going on until Stroke back, and you know, they blew a solid, not his best
control,
effort.
You know, if Chatwood had better control, you might consider him, but control, unfortunately, is still an issue with him. So you can't have a guy with control issues to be a closer.
Oh, well, they used to. There were always guys with control issues. Look at Mitch Williams. He made a career out of it as a closer.
The wild thing.
Mitch Williams.
The wild thing. Yeah,
Mitch,
I remember him
Bob
coming
Dibble,
in.
You know, that
loading
the
bases.
Thing.
The wild thing was pretty interesting pitcher for the Cubs. We never knew which
for the Cubs. The
And don't forget Ryan Duren of the Yankees, too. Do you remember him? Or was that before
your time? Guy's got a... No, that's before my time. So,
he had these big glasses. He used to come in, and he had horrible control issues. And he would come in, and the first pitch warming up would be to the backstop. And this kind of, the batters would be taking a chance when going against him because you never knew where the ball was coming from. Guy had a great arm. He could throw the ball hard. But... he was a dangerous pitcher to go against.
They can complain about Chatwood all you want. He's 3-0 with a 2.86 ERA, and you know he hit a double the other day to put the Cubs in position to win the game. So
yeah, he did. He did, and I believe he's a 2.09 lifetime hitter in the major leagues too. He's a pretty decent hitter.
So you know, just kind of. Kind of how that goes. I mean, you know, he's better than, you know, I'd rather see him come in than James Norwood trying to close a game or, you know, Tyler Lyon or some of these other guys who should have been cut or, you know, unbelievable that they're actually at the major league level. So, you know.
If they had a good bullpen, he would be running away with the Central Division right now. It must have cost him at least 4 or 5 games, at least.
Yeah, probably. So, you know, and the weird part is, like, you look, and, I mean, some of the ERAs are really solid. Like, coming into today, C-Shack had a really good ERA. So did, you know, Chatwood, Kitzler, Brock. You know, they were all really solid. But there's just, you know, they don't promote the idea that you're going to stop anybody. You know, I mean, C-Shack comes in the game, and you don't think it's over. You know, I mean, the minutes the Reds went to Iglesias, I went, okay, he'll be able to nail this lead down, no problem. So,
and he had no issues at all, no.
Yeah.
And that's what the Cubs desperately need. But they didn't address the issue in the offseason as you told them to do, and I will always remember that they didn't pay attention to what you said, and now it's hurting them.
Yeah. You know, and hopefully, you know, I mean, hopefully they figure something out. You know, if they do get in the playoffs, they have it worked out by then because it will be their downfall if they do get in the playoffs. But,
you, see them,
you know, especially with the way
that kind of move, if they're in contention, July, August, getting a short-term closer, if they did in 2016.
Yeah. Problem is they don't have anybody to give up to go get a short-term closer now. You know, their minor league system is a joke. That, you know, they have zero prospects. So they're,
well, they can give him Ian Happ. He's hitting 240 down in Iowa. I mean, what's wrong with that?
You know, they
strike out about
somebody's
a third
dumb
of the
enough.
Time. Yeah.
So,
Interesting, by the way. I don't know if he knows his stats, but his strikeout rate is still about 30-40%, and this is in Triple A, so I don't see him coming back to the club anytime soon.
Yeah, well, you know, the sad part is so is Joey Gallo, and I just heard somebody say he should be considered an MVP candidate in the American League. So that'll tell you where the game is headed.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, as sad as and upsetting as that is, but you
if
know,
I
we'll see how.
You mentioned Joey Gallo. That reminded me, of course, of Joey Votto. He's hitting a 208 this year, but he must be hitting 700 against the Cubs. Why is that?
You know, some teams you just hit better against some teams than others. So they were, you know, they were talking. I'm trying to remember, there was somebody else they were talking about that with. You know, it was for whatever reason, the ballpark they were in on the road, the guy just killed it. And, you know, he was having a rough year. He was hitting about 220 or something like that. And they went into this series and, you know, he ended up going, you know, he was like 10 for 15 or something in the series. And it's just against on the road at that ballpark. He rakes. And for whatever reason, it seems to work out for you.
Have you noticed that in years past there have been some teams that the guy hits really well against them? We need this guy. Let's get him on our team. Look how great he hits against us in our ballpark. So they'll bring him aboard, and then he'll hit 190.
Yeah, well, you know, that happens, you know, so many times. You think, oh, yeah, this guy's going to this ballpark where his career numbers are this. And then he gets there, and, yeah, he can't hit. So.
Yeah, it's a funny game,
you know,
sometimes.
Yeah, you know, you kind of wonder what happens to these guys when, you know, they get there and it's like, wait, he was killing everybody, you know. I mean, he's been killing us for years in this ballpark. I think that happened years ago to the Cubs. They signed Jeff Blauser to play shortstop because when he was with the Braves, he just hit lights out in Wrigley Field. So it made sense. Oh, this is a great signing. And he stunk. So.
It's really funny how these things happen in baseball.
You know, and, you know, I mean, you can, you know, you look at the Sox. I mean, they go out and they sign Adam Dunn, who's hitting 80 home runs in any other uniform he gets on. The Sox get him as a big-time free agent, and, you know, he can't hit his way out of a paper bag. So.
Well, he had a sure home run for the White Sox, but I don't think his batting average ever over 200.
Yeah, well, you know, I think one year it may have been, but he, in all honesty, he didn't even really hit his share of home runs for the White Sox. You know, I mean, he hit a few, but he didn't put up anywhere near the numbers he was putting up with other teams. You know, I got to see if I can find it here. Well, he did have 41 with them one year, but, you know, he had five consecutive years, or actually six consecutive years of 40 or more. The 2 years he didn't hit 40, after that he hit 38. You know, the one year with the White Sox, he did manage to get to 34. The other year he got to 22. But he also struck out 220.
Yeah, and probably hit about .190, most likely, right? .95, maybe?
Here you go. Well, his first year with the White Sox, he hit .159. Then he hit .204 and .219, and he was hitting .220 when they shipped him off to the A's. So, what'd they get? A bucket of balls?
Yeah,
I mean, I got to see what this was. So, all right. They sent him to the A's for Nolan Sanburn. I got to see who Nolan Sanburn is or was or what happened to him now. All right. Looks like 2017 is his last year, and he never pitched above Class Double A.
Hmm. They didn't give very much for him, did they?
No, but at least they got something. So,
yeah.
You know, it looks like he was 12-15 in his career with a 3.96 ERA.
Yeah, how about that, huh? Well, they saw his last name and they figured maybe he going to be like Ryan Sandberg, only from a pitching standpoint. But it doesn't always work that way.
But, yeah, so, you know, and then, you know, I noticed that, God, it was just a few weeks ago, you know, the Cardinals were the talk of the NL Central. You know, if you look now, they're actually just one game over 500 and, you know, four games back of the Cubs. And apparently they have decided that the way to fix this is they are shipping Michael Wacha off to the bullpen. He's made 9 starts this year. He's 3-2 with a whopping ERA of 5.59. You know, I'm kind of curious on how they're going to fill this void, because I don't believe Carlos Martinez is ready to return. But somehow, you know, they're going to have to cover. Let me see if I can – has Martinez? Yeah, does. So – they do have Martinez in 3 games, but was that before he went on the IL?
Yeah, I don't think he's ready.
So,
to
yeah,
that.
I'm interested to see, you know, what they're going to try to do or how they're going to try to, you know, try to do this, because they don't have Martinez listed on their injury report anymore. But I don't, for some reason, I don't think he's back in the majors. Do you? Do you?
No, I don't think so. I think he's wasn't he on the 60-day list? Or?
Yeah, I'm looking here to see. It doesn't look like. I just got to. Yeah, he hasn't. Well, he pitched. He is back. He pitched 1 inning of relief 2 days ago against the Royals.
Well,
so
maybe,
it looks like they're using him in relief as well. So I don't know if, you know, how. I guess they're just going
to
shove all the guys
in the
bullpen.
Get him back in the starting role again, though. Is he going to come back to being eventually a starter, assuming he's healthy?
I honestly don't know. You know, because there's no. You know, no notification or anything here on what they're planning on doing with him. But, you know, you figure if Wacha is out of the rotation and they're not going with Martinez, that means they have Miles Mikolas, Jack Flaherty, Adam Wainwright, and I guess they'll stick with Dakota Hudson since he's already made 9 starts this year. But I don't know where the fifth guy comes from. The article says it's, you know, either Austin Gomer or Alex Reyes, but Reyes has been injured for so long, I don't know if that would be their best move. I don't know. You know what they're going to do.
Well, certainly they've been one of the more disappointing teams in the National League this year, and I thought they would contend, and now they're Pittsburgh has passed them, if I'm not correct. Am I correct? Yeah. They're in fourth place now, right?
Yeah, they're in fourth place. They're actually 2 games ahead of the Reds right now, because the Reds already have a win that's not on here today. So.
Yeah. So they could be hitting the last place.
Yeah. So it's just kind of weird, because like I said, I mean, they were so hot for so long, you know, and it just, you know, it ended very quickly.
But you know they're going to turn it around pretty soon, right? Sometime in June.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they're, you know, as, you know, well, they're really, I mean, they're still over 500. It's not like they stink. You know, they just must be going through a rough patch. Their starters' ERAs are really high, so obviously that's a concern. So I'm just kind of interested because, you know, Wacha was one of those guys, I mean, he was looked at as a guy who was going to be a future ace. And he just, I mean, impossible to stay healthy. I'm going to have to put the player part here, but I don't know if he's had 130 start season.
He's been injured quite a bit through the course of his career, and that really hurts. It's a shame that when that happens, and it's amazing how many pitchers, and we've talked about this before, but with the great, the stringent diet and the exercise regime and everything else and the training, there seem to be more pitchers hurt now than there was 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, looking at his player card, he's had 2 30-start seasons and one 24-start season. Now, this is his seventh year in the majors. Well, really technically a sixth because he was just a call-up his first year. He's never pitched 200 innings. The closest he's got is 181 and a third. So that is definitely not ace material.
No,
when he came up, they talked about him as being an ace.
Well, it always looked like he had good stuff. From the times I've seen him pitch, he looked like he had a potential to be a very, very good pitcher. But as you pointed out, though, the injuries, maybe it's a cumulative effect. He's been injured so many times that the wear and tear on the body. And is he going to be permanently in the bullpen now? Is that the plan?
They never say permanently. It just, it's one of those things where, maybe he's going down there to work stuff out. I don't know how they'll hide it or how they'll try to cover it. But, yeah, it's hugely disappointing. It's got to be hugely disappointing if you're a Cardinal fan, to see this happen and then not have Carlos Martinez at the ready to step in and fill that rotation spot. And I don't know how far away Martinez could be, if they could stretch him out and get him back in the rotation, if they'll even do that.
Do they have any promising rookies in Memphis that maybe they think are ready to come into the rotation and help them?
The guy they're waiting on is this Alex Reyes, who is, he's been a prospect for, God, I don't even know how long now, but he's been another injury prone guy. Let me see what we got on him here. Yeah, he's made a, what do we got? He's pitched in 3 starts, 6 games in the minors. AAA posted an ERA of 2.61. That's where he spent 5 of his games. He did make 1 start in high class A, where he ended up going 5 innings and just gave up a run. But even when you look at this, I mean, he's got 6 games on the books at 15 and a third innings. So even if he's your answer, he's not going to give you any innings. And he has appeared in some games with the Cardinals. Has this been lately? He must have went back down. Yeah, he was here April 5th was his last outing with the Cardinals. He pitched out of the bullpen, and he didn't really pitch very well. He made 4 appearances while he was here. They covered 3 total innings in 4 appearances. 5 runs. He walked 6 guys in 3 innings and only struck out 1. And he's the big-time pitching prospect they're looking at.
Yeah, that's not the answer.
The other guy is Austin Gomer, who popped up, spent some time with the Cardinals last year. He actually pitched in 29 games for St. Louis last year. But in 8 starts at Triple-A right now, he's 4-0 with a 2.98 ERA. So you got to think he gets the first look, because if Reyes is just going to walk people, you can't run him out there. That ain't going to help anybody. So,
yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of disgruntled Cardinal fans out there. They have a pretty strong fan base, too, and they always seem to draw well. And, boy, you ever look at the attendance in some of these other teams, or even contending teams in 60, 70% capacity, and they usually are pretty close to sellouts in most of their games. So the fans are not happy, but they're still coming out. They're still coming out to watch them.
That's why I always chuckle when the Cardinals are called small market, because they get that extra draft pick because they're considered small market. And, they draw better than most of, if not all, of the big markets. So, it's just like, okay, great.
Well, they have some great sports fans in St. Louis, and I'm sure right now a lot of them are paying attention to the NHL finals because the Bruins are playing the Blues, and Blues have been in the championship finals for what, 40-plus years at least. And maybe
it's been a while.
It's been a long time, and they may have been in the championship the first 3 years of their existence, but they were all expansion teams then, and then the top expansion team would go against the winner in the regular NHL conference for the championship, so they're almost automatically into the finals. And of course, they didn't do too well, but I'm sure the fans are quite excited about it. But even though I think that St. Louis probably has a bigger baseball fan base than hockey, the Blues have been there for quite a while.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I want to. I didn't want to forget. I want to make sure I get your picks out of the way here. Now, you did. You did pretty well last week. You did miss on you had the Cubs not winning the series against the Nationals, but they did, and you picked Houston to end their winning streak, and they did end up winning. But you are 15-8 so far, so you're rolling along. You get a gift today. So you know the Cubs aren't going to sweep the series against the Reds, so you got that going for you already. Now, I can tell you tomorrow it's Tyler Molly against Yu Darvish, and then on Sunday to wrap up the series, it's Tanner Roark against Jose Quintana. Do you have the Cubs coming back to win the series with Cincinnati?
No. Based upon who's pitching tomorrow, I'll have to say they're going to split the next two games, and so once again, Cincinnati is going to beat them 2 out of 3.
Yes, and then now on Monday, they go to Houston. The series starts with Cole Hamels against Garrett Cole. On Tuesday, it is John Lester against Corbin Martin. On Wednesday, we have... It's always tough to find with two Chicago teams. Kyle Hendricks against Wade Miley. I think it's just a 3-game series. I didn't look any farther.
Yes. No,
so,
they're off next Thursday.
Do you have the Cubs beating Houston in this series?
Well, I'm going to give you my honest answer now. I anticipate a sweep Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
By
Houston.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm crazy.
So, okay.
To sweep Houston on the road? No, I think I have a bad vibe about this one. I have Houston sweeping the Cubs. I have Houston.
Okay.
I think for a couple of reasons. The Cubs, first of all, the Monday game's a given. It's a loss. You know that. And I don't think they'll see them winning the next two games either. And I'm wondering if Houston's going to kind of play a little better than they did against the White Sox. By the way, you were right. It was a 4-game series against the White Sox. I think Houston wants to send a statement to the Cubs that, hey, you want them 16, we want them 17, we're better than you are. And if it comes down to a World Series, we're going to beat you. So we're going to come up and sweep the series against the Cubs.
All right. Now, tonight, there are actually two teams tied for the longest winning streak. It's 6 games apiece. So I want you to pick which one of these teams is going to get to 7 tonight. Do you see Miami beating Washington? Miami has the 6-game winning streak. Pablo Lopez pitches for Miami and Washington as well as Paolo McGowan, or do you have Oakland extending their winning streak? They're hosting Seattle. It's Wade LeBlanc for Oakland against Daniel Megden for Oakland. So who extends their winning streak to 7 tonight, Miami or Oakland?
I will have to say that Oakland will extend their streak to 7 tonight. But Miami won't.
All right, there you go. Look at that. You got all locked in just in time for me to hit the music and then us to leave, so we're all set. All right, well, that's you and I will take them now for a quick program. We're not here on Sunday because Mr. Fantasy is in Europe. We're not here on Sunday because it's Memorial Day and Dan likes the holidays off. If you don't do something on Tuesday, but as you all have moved on, get to sportstimeradio.com. There will be a blog that goes tomorrow morning, so you'll be able to check that out. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, follow the link over to the Facebook page. Get that online. Now, don't forget the Twitter feed, which is at sportstimeradio. Just feel free to look me up on Twitter at Burke Time. As always, big thanks if you came out and listened to Sue and I live. It's cool when you do that. We really appreciate it. But remember, the podcast is available for you to listen to anytime you want at TuneIn.com.